good snowy morning to you, and thanks for listening to 88.5 KRFY. This is the morning show. We are live in the studios, and yes, we're all here. Good morning. I'm Susie Prez, and this is Wednesday, December 11th. And I'm here with my co-host, my smiling co-host.
I'm Chris Bessler, sitting over here on the second microphone. Good morning, Susie. How you doing?
I'm well, thank you, and good morning to you. And tell us what we have in store this day.
Well, we're going to be talking about the Idaho legislature, and we have our District 1 Representative Sage Dixon here. And we're going to be taking a look ahead to the coming year, which starts off in January. Sage, thank you for being here.
Happy to be here again, Chris and Susie.
Yeah, it's nice to see you, Representative Dixon. Going into your, sixth year here?
Yes. This is the end of my third term, so 2020 will be my sixth session in the legislature.
Wow, congratulations.
You're one of the oldest hands. I think you're, didn't Heather Scott start the same year you did?
Yes. Yeah. Representative Scott and I came in the same year, and so she's on the same time frame I am. So.
And we were hoping to hear from her, but I don't think the schedules worked out that way, but we may eventually have her come in and chat with us also. But before we get to our exciting interview with Representative Dixon from the National Weather Service, we might as well talk about the weather. We have a dusting of snow up out there and hopefully lots of snow up on the mountain. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Chris? Do we?
Actually, I didn't get this morning's snow report on the mountain, but I know about 800 feet higher up at Baldy, they had about 3 inches this morning. So more than a dusting. It's actually starting to look like winter.
We're ready.
And I think there's more coming, right?
What's the National Weather Service saying? Let's see what they have to say. Currently overcast, 28 degrees. We have patchy fog, 80% chance of precipitation, rain this afternoon, 35 degrees down here in the valley, which probably will mean snow on the mountain. And then we go into a winter storm warning starting tonight. We have 100% chance of precipitation all the way through till Friday morning. And our lows are 32 and our highs are 39. So down in the valley, that will mean rain, and up on the mountain, lots of snow. And other than that, that's all I have to say.
Well, that's actually good news for skiers. A few other things going on outside. The sunrise this morning was at 7:26 a.m. It'll set tonight at 3:51 p.m. We're getting really close to winter solstice now. It's December 21st, a little over a week away. We start losing a little bit of daylight each day. We lost 10 minutes per day this last week. But after we hit December 21st and the solstice, every day gets longer. How's that sound?
I'm ready.
And we've had some really beautiful night skies up there too. Mm-hmm. There's going to be the Geminids meteor shower on Friday, and that should be visible all night long, peaking around 2 a.m. We're going to have a full moon Thursday though, so that usually interferes with the falling stars that you can see in these meteor showers. But it's definitely worth going out and looking up to see the meteors if we have the right clear skies. Sounds kind of questionable, actually.
That sounds good. Yeah. So how about a Sandpoint City Minute?
Sure. What's happening with this city government?
Well, a couple things. One of the things is the Sandpoint is encouraging folks to get on the internet and sign up for Engage Sandpoint. You can go to sandpointidaho.gov and to sign up, and you can be connected to the city that way. Also, this is from Jennifer Stapleton. Please join us in supporting our local downtown businesses this holiday season. When parking downtown, you may notice the white lines adjacent to the curb. These were painted to create a temporary walking lane during construction when the fences were up. Now they want you to park against the curb. Even though those white lines are there, don't park outside. We've seen those domino parking patterns downtown. Well, now they're saying park next to the curb. It's now available and encouraged.
Yeah, there has been confusion about that. People have been thinking that was a bike lane, and that wasn't the intent, actually. So ignore that. Park next to the curb.
And it will help with the snow plows now. You won't see that white line with the snow on the ground, but park right up against the curb, folks. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A couple other things going on around town. The up at Schweitzer Mountain, they're having Community Day on Friday. This is a great deal for the community. Lift tickets are only $10. That's this Friday, December 13th. And the money all goes to two of our great nonprofits here in town, the Community Cancer Services and the Bonner Partners in Care Clinic. So you can ski, get a really good deal, and know that your money is going to go to support those two worthy causes.
Sounds good. Another thing, just quickly, this is the season to be jolly and grateful. KRFY wants to thank all our listeners, underwriters, and volunteers for being the support that keeps KRFY Community Radio strong and on the air as the voice of our community. At this time, we are reaching out to you, our listeners, for an end-of-the-year donation. You can make that by going to our website, krfy.org, and we sincerely appreciate your kind consideration. Thank you. And also, we're having a party, Chris. Tell us about it.
Yeah, we're having our annual meeting and fundraiser. That's next Wednesday, December 18th. It's at the Poor Authority, 5 to 8 p.m. Poor Authority is at 203 Cedar Street, right on Cedar there. There'll be music by Marty Perrone and Doug Bond. Hopefully, I didn't butcher Marty's name there.
That was exactly right.
Okay. There will be... I think we're going to have some auction items, are we?
We're going to have some really fun silent auction items. One that I'm excited about, six or seven of the local nonprofit organizations in our community gave us really cool merchandise gear. And we're going to have a little basket of their gear and things like that that you can bid on as a group.
Yeah,
to support KRFY and a few other, some really great wine and a few other things, but also a raffle.
Yeah,
for and the brewery will be Payette Brewery out of Boise.
They're the featured brewery. Of course, you can get beer from a gazillion different places because Idaho Poor Authority has that. Mm-hmm. And while it may look like a party and sound like a party, it's actually our annual meeting. So we will be giving a little talk about how the station's doing. Our report to our members.
We will. We'll even have a written annual report there. But you know how we are here at 88.5 KRFY. We like to have fun no matter what we're doing. So our annual meeting is a fun party. So we're encouraging everyone to come down and see how our community radio station, this is your station as much as mine, and we'll look forward to seeing everyone there. And I want to give a shout out to John and Vicki Hagedon for it's John Hagedon, Vicki Reisch for always hosting these nonprofit celebrations and fundraisers at the Idaho Poor Authority. It's a great way and a good partnership.
Yeah, I think they basically do that every Wednesday. There's a different worthy cause.
And I think tonight is the Idaho Conservation League.
Yeah, so there's a good one right there. So that's Wednesday, December 18th, next Wednesday for our annual meeting. It's 5 to 8 p.m. at Idaho Poor Authority. And with that, let's get into today's topic. Again, we have Representative Sage Dixon with us. He's the District 1 representative in Idaho Legislature. Sage, thank you so much for being here.
Happy to be here. I felt like jumping in a little bit when you were giving all those reports. And any meeting that is a slash party sounds pretty interesting.
Well, so why don't you come down and join us?
I may. Yeah. My schedule may not allow, but that may be fun.
Yeah, you're probably getting kind of busy getting just geared up for this next legislative session.
This has been a very, pardon me, busy year. And I was fooling myself this summer thinking, okay, August is ending. I'm going to be able to relax. But our busiest time is in the fall. That's when everybody really starts to reach out to us, different interest groups and all the agencies. And just yesterday, we had three meetings with state agencies. Both Representative Scott and Senator Woodward and I were down in Coeur d'Alene with the Transportation Department, with Fish and Game, and with the Tax Commission. And so it does not slow down this time of year. It just picks up speed, and that's what we do, though.
Full blast probably till the end of the session, which usually comes in March, although last year was, I believe, the third largest session on record. It went 95 days. You were dealing with some big issues last year. Medicaid expansion was one.
Right.
And, we're going to want to talk about what you foresee for the big issues this year. But first of all, each of the representatives gets assigned to a committee. And you're on four of the kind of the more important committees, the business, ethics, revenue and taxation, and transportation and defense. I think I have that correct.
Yes, you do.
Tell us what each of these committees works on, like the business committee, which you chair.
Correct. I'm honored to chair that. This was my first year as the chair, and I haven't been told that I won't be continuing in 2020, so I expect to do that again. Business deals with a broad scope of business issues. It'll be banking issues and credit unions, insurance, real estate. It also goes into occupational licensing and building codes and little bit of peripheral things like that, but that's the bulk of what we do there. So it helps that I was an electrical contractor for many years and understand that part of it, but it also helps that I studied finance and worked in the investment industry for a little bit and have been a small business owner. So that helps give me a perspective on that. And many on the committee have that perspective as well. So it's a great committee to chair.
Mm-hmm. And the other committee that I think you might be chairing is the Ethics Committee.
Right. Ethics, every new term, the body itself selects an Ethics Committee. Each party, so minority and majority, there we go, that's what I was looking for. So the majority will caucus and choose who they want to represent them on the Ethics Committee, and the minority will caucus as well and do that. And so I was one of the three selected as the primary members of that Ethics Committee, and then we have two alternates also. The minority gets three members total, so two sitting members and one alternate, and then the Speaker appointed me chair of that committee. Ethics Committee only meets if there's an ethics charge, generally. This year, during session, we were trying to change some of our House rules and the way we govern ourselves within the House of Representatives. And there was a lot of concern about what was happening with those rules within the body. And so the Speaker appointed the Ethics Committee to be a working group in the interim to look at our policies and rules and make recommendations to him. So we had more work than usual this year in doing that. We met a couple times in the interim, tried to go through our mail policy and our internet policy. And then a large topic is what is called the respectful workplace policy, which governs the whole Capitol building. It's how everybody interacts together, because there have been some issues over the years. And the concern is, how do we as elected representatives, not really state employees, interact with state employees and the public? And what is that chain there that happens if there is a complaint? And how does that interact with the Ethics Committee? And so that was a difficult thing to look at.
And when you're talking about rules, the House rules, isn't there going to be a big review prior to any start to the session of, like, there were 800 and now they're going to, it's down to 750,
right, well,
something like
put
that?
Put a zero on the end of those numbers, Susie. It was about 8,500 pages of rules.
Tell us about that for a moment, because that's kind of on the agenda.
It is, and that's what we do at the beginning of every session. So Idaho is one of the few states that has the legislature has oversight of executive branch rules or agency rules. When we make a law, they go through and fill in all the blanks of how this is actually going to be implemented. We have oversight in saying this is what we intended or not what we intended. And at the end of every session, we have what was colloquially termed our going home bill. And that was just a reauthorization of every existing rule. Well, in the battle with the Senate, we asked for a small change in the way we do that, because now if one body says yes, then it becomes effective. The rules do. So oftentimes the House would say no, and these agencies would trot over to the Senate and give them a little different spin on it, and it would pass. And so then it becomes effectively law. And we felt in the House that it should follow the same procedure as making law, that it would take both bodies to approve these rules or a single body rejection. We gave that proposal to the Senate in this going home bill, which generally was very benign and just got passed quickly at the end of every session. They sent it back without our suggestions, and we said, well, we're not going to hear that. So that's why on June 30th of this year, every rule effectively was null and void within the state of Idaho. The governor has the authority to institute temporary rules. So everything that needed to keep going kept going, but it gave him and his staff the opportunity to look at every rule that we had in his Red Tape Reduction Act also. So they eliminated close to 70%. There was some very low-hanging fruit there, things that were antiquated and easy, but they took the time to go through every single rule and ask the agencies to reduce their rules. And so coming to us this year, as opposed to just being rules that we just passed this year, it will be every rule that was ever instituted in the state. So it's going to take a bit longer.
A little bit of house cleaning up front, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk about the other two committees you're on. They're both actually pretty important ones. One is revenue and taxation, and I imagine that it probably holds sway over a lot of the spending bills that occur, or
that one work? A little bit with the revenue portion of it, but generally the Budget Committee, or what we call JFAC, the Joint Appropriation and for Finance and Appropriation Committee, handles all the budgets. And they're given the estimated revenues from the governor's office, and they work through that. But this is what are we collecting, essentially? And so any sort of tax reduction or tax increase would come through that committee. This was my first year on that committee. I've been bounced around on my morning committees every term that I've had, which is good. I'm getting a broad perspective, but I did enjoy serving on JFAC, but as a committee chair, you can no longer serve on JFAC. So I had to give that up. And this is what the speaker appointed me to. So I'm still kind of learning the ins and outs. It takes a while to understand what I term the whole trajectory of legislation and what's been going on before I was there and who's running these bills and what their objective is or their perspective. So it is an important committee, but I'm still kind of getting my feet under me. We deal with local option tax. We dealt with urban renewal districts. We dealt with counties and how they're collecting taxes or assessing taxes, and then the state itself. We dealt with the Wayfair decision, as it's termed, in South Dakota, which allowed states to collect that income tax or sales tax, I'm sorry, on internet sales. And so now we are collecting sales tax on internet purchases. We put that into a special fund to help move in the direction of removing the sales tax on groceries. It's been a large issue. I think the budget is still a bit too tight this year. I don't think we're going to see it from what I'm hearing in my colleagues on JFAC, and specifically Senator Woodward, who's watching that issue a little bit. There was hope that this would be the year because of our budget problems last year with our change in the tax structure and the revenues not coming in. We thought we'd be settled this year. We can remove that sales tax on groceries. But I think there's still some concern about, even though we're doing great economically, just how that's all measuring out with what our obligations are in payments. And so we've decided to put that in a fund. And yesterday we heard that there's roughly, I believe they said $28 million in that fund to date, just in 5 months. It started being collected in June. So that'll be a positive for the state in that sense. Transportation and defense is just what it says. It's everything to do with our Idaho National Guard, which is very limited. Usually it's just some updates they have per national code. And then everything to do with our roads and highways and how sometimes funding goes through there. We need to look at that. But
Can that committee handle legislation that might be dealing with a specific highway in a specific part of the state?
Generally, that is a decision of the Transportation Board. We will make recommendations about signage and how things are governed, speed limits or things like that. Not that we've dealt with that. We dealt with The stop signs on buses for pedestrian traffic. We wanted to increase the fines on that or something. Somebody brought that proposal because nationally there's some statistics that are rising where children are being hit by cars by people not paying attention to those arms that come out to the buses and things like that. Not specifically where the dollars go, although we could enact legislation to do that, and we're often part of that discussion. There's specific committees have sway over budget items sometimes because we can't control legislation in that sense. So you get to be part of those discussions, but ultimately that's up to the board. It's interesting. We've been working for about the past 4 years on the MacArthur curve as you head up to Bonner's Ferry and trying to get that straightened. And the history of that is it gets put on the list to be repaired and then eventually just falls off. They push it back, and it falls off. And that seems to be happening again. So we're pushing there and not so much here in Bonner County. Everything is moving along fairly smoothly, but Boundary County continually sees their projects being pushed off and falling off. So through my position on the Transportation Committee, I'm able to apply a little pressure to them. And we have a great new member of the board who's representing the District 1, Jim Thompson, who lives out headed west off
of Highway. And, of course, you represent Boundary County as part of District 1.
Yes.
Yeah, all of Boundary County, actually. So the reason these committees are so important is because legislation almost always starts there, right?
Right.
It has to go through the committees in order to be picked up by the full body.
Correct.
Yeah.
The initial process, and I'm sure we've talked about this as the years I've been in there, is you have an idea, you get a draft made. And generally a legislator gets that done, but we can give permission to a citizen or anybody else. We give what's called a purple slip, and it tells the legislative services office that they can work with this individual rather than a legislator. Get a draft made. Then you come to a committee for what's called a print hearing, just the initial hearing. And we say to the committee, what do you think of this idea? It's very superficial, but should all stop signs be green? Well, no, we think that's ridiculous. So away goes your idea. Or yes, we think that's valid, but we'd like to have a discussion. So then it gets printed and applied an actual number. It'll be House Bill number 1 or Senate Bill number 1. You come back to that same committee. Generally, things can move around. Sometimes it's up to the speaker and a little bit of some predetermined metrics. Then you have the full hearing on the bill, and you'll have your cross-examination, as it were, and questions. And once the committee passes that, then it goes to the House floor. If it passes the House floor, it goes to the Senate. you don't have to go through the print hearing anymore, but you'll go through that committee process again. So you're exactly right. It's protracted. Sometimes we can send it right to the House floor in the print hearing. If we think this is very basic, let's just move it along. You don't have to have that full hearing, if you will, and we do that often. Mm-hmm. I won't say often. It's more of an occasionally. If something's very simple, a small change to something that already came through, or a very benign issue.
Mm-hmm. And a great way for people to keep up with what's happening down in Boise is there's a really good website that the state has. Yes. I think it's idaho.gov, is it?
Well, you would go legislature.idaho.gov.
Okay, legislature.idaho.gov. And there's a ton of information there about bills that are pending and what's happening, right. and all the committees, too, I believe.
Yes, yeah. You can sign up for what's called a bill tracker. If there's a certain issue you're interested in, you know there's legislation, you can go on there, and they'll send you updates about where it is in the progress of what I just described. You can sign up for newsletters from all your legislators. You can look at what the committees are hearing, the progress of certain bills. It'll go into our statutes and law. Mm-hmm. And then the Constitution is on there also. But yes, it'll give you a list of everybody on each committee. So if you feel like contacting them, you're able to do that. They've done a very good job with that website.
Well, when folks say they want to know what's going on, I think the Idaho legislature and the government down in Boise has done a great job on transparency and making it possible for folks to be informed and be involved as much as possible. I think that the Idaho legislature convenes January 6th with a State of the State speech by Governor Brad Little. And what do you foresee as the biggest issues the legislature will be working on this year?
The rules issue that I described earlier will be a big issue. I think that will chew up a lot of time, as we were talking about earlier. I think Medicaid expansion funding is still going to be an issue as we start to see that the true number of who's going to be signing up. I don't know if that'll be the true number at this point. Right, the last thing that I saw, I believe there was close to 50,000, about 47 to 50,000 that had signed up as of the end of November already. And I did get some information specific to District 1. There's a little over 1,200 people in District 1 that have signed up, which is kind of middle of the pack. When I looked at the rest of the numbers, it wasn't extraordinarily high or low. Some districts had over 2,000, some had barely 1,000, but it's all right in there. So once we see what that will actually look like, and then having to really define what the funding is going to look like if we can at that point, I think that'll still be a large discussion. There's been, I don't want to say stopgap, but we've addressed this initial first 6 months of what we anticipated. So that is taken care of with different existing funds that were there. But going forward, that'll be a tough discussion, mainly for the Budget Committee. Excuse me. Go ahead, Chris.
So the way the Medicaid expansion works, as I understand it, the federal government's paying about 90%, but the state's going to have to come up with 10%.
Correct.
That. And right now, the projection is, I've heard, is like around 30 million or 30 to 60 million that the state's going to have to come up with.
That's the initial numbers that I heard, right, based upon that 65,000 or so that was anticipated. It went up, and the higher end of that probably is when we took in the people, pardon me, that are on the exchange right now that would qualify for Medicaid expansion. So it bumped up to about 91, 92 while we were in session last year or earlier this year.
Those are the ones would be eligible.
Yes.
But not all those people will necessarily go for
it. Oh, they have to. They're being forced onto it. Yeah, and that's kind of an issue that friends in the insurance industry have been talking about, that people are not happy about that because they're losing their private insurance, essentially, and the doctor that they know, and being forced into that system of Medicaid within Idaho. You can't go outside of Idaho with that Medicaid card, and it has to be all within here. So there's some people that are unhappy with being forced off of it. And that was one of the waivers that we requested from the federal government, is that those people could stay if they wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
But we weren't granted that waiver.
Mm-hmm.
So we will be taking those people. So the 90,000 mark is what was anticipated. And that would probably be the 60 million in there. I don't remember all those figures exactly because I've not been in depth in those discussions, just when we have a caucus and talk about it. My knowledge isn't as deep as I would like it to be at this point. But what you're saying is what I understand to be true.
Okay, so other issues that you see coming up that you anticipate might be big ones at the legislature this year?
Funding in general is going to be difficult, even though, as I said, the economy is strong and we just we're above our projections in last month, which is great because it's been touch and go. But transportation funding, being on that committee, and I carried that budget when I was on JFAC, cars are getting more efficient. The fuels tax and registration is not covering it, and our growth is incredible. We're in the top two, if not the top growing nation or state in the nation. It's funny, as I meet other legislators, everybody quotes that. So we may not be, but at any rate, we know we're growing exponentially in the South, in the Kootenai County area, and us up here as well. So addressing those infrastructure needs are going to be difficult. So we're trying to look at different ways of doing that, going to different national conferences and seeing what other states are doing with funding. I think it would be very difficult to pass a per mile tax, as it were, or some sort of user fee where you are taxed per mile that you go, you know, registering those miles. That's just very difficult to do in Idaho. I'm not in favor of that, but that is something that Washington and Oregon are looking at closely. But it seems appropriate in the sense that it's a true user fee. The miles you're going, you're taxed on. And the gas tax is similar to that, but it's hard to raise a tax in Idaho. Mm-hmm. But we've got to look at this because it's a serious issue.
Yeah. So funding for our highways comes chiefly from that gas tax. And with cars becoming more efficient, they're using less gas per mile. So that's what's throwing off the funding calculations there. And of course, some vehicles are electric vehicles now. And that's is there any provision right now for somebody that owns an electric vehicle to pay anything into the
We've added an additional amount onto the registration to make up for that. That's what we've done there. And that wasn't well received by those who drive electric vehicles or hybrids. But that's how we were trying to mitigate that loss in gas tax and pick it up. But it's just too little at this point.
Well, somebody has to pay for roads, right? So and those vehicles use roads as well. So
correct. Yeah. And some people default to trucks because they're heavier and essentially do more damage in the long run, but they pay large fees already. And it's interesting puzzle to try and fit everything together and make everybody happy, but still fund the state like we need to fund it. And that's where the difficulty is.
Yeah, I think it's a balancing that use so that the roads are covered. But when you're anticipating the growth that Idaho is experiencing as far as income tax coming in eventually, how long is the period before you actually receive that extra income from, say, income tax? For the 88,000 that I heard that number moving to Idaho last year, when do you see that revenue increase?
I don't know specifically,
Susie. How does a budget look at that?
Our fiscal year is July 1 to July 1, essentially. So when somebody moves here and starts paying that employment tax or having that taken out of their paycheck, when it's remitted in April or early February when the corporate remissions are and things like that, we would see that. So early 2020, we should see some increase. And as that goes, obviously that would keep going up in that sense. So it shouldn't be too much of a lag in watching that. And so I would say within a year, you should be able to fully realize a lot of what the increased population is doing for income tax purposes. I still think a lot of our increased population is retirees, though, and that's an issue we have to deal with as well. It's not necessarily people that are active in the workforce, so it doesn't increase our revenues quite as much as maybe you'd think.
As much as we'd like.
Right.
If you've just tuned in, you are listening to The Morning Show here this Wednesday, December 11th. And our guests today, we're speaking with Representative Sage Dixon from District 1, Idaho. And we can continue.
Other issues you'd identify? We have some that we numbered out here to ask you about. But were there some that you see coming down the pike here that that might be big this year?
Oddly enough, I've been somewhat out of the loop, except on specific issues this year. I was appointed to, we started a federalism committee, just a two-year kind of pilot committee to discuss our interaction with the federal government. And I was appointed to the lands subcommittee on that to represent the northern part of the state in how we deal with the federal government and the lands issue there. That has taken up a little bit of my time. And then the governor also appointed me to the shared stewardship advisory group, which is very similar situation where it's a group of maybe 15 to 20 of stakeholders in various industries in the federal government, and the Conservation League is there, and myself and Senator Steve Vick to discuss how we can work better together to better manage our state lands, specifically forests, in doing that. So that has taken up a lot of my time this year. I haven't been deeply involved in different policy issues. So my knowledge is somewhat superficial of those things, except for larger issues where I talk to people about that. But there's always something. You know, I think I've said this again. I have ideas as I go through the year. Oh, that's a great idea, Chris. I'll take care of that. But when you get there, it all changes. And different issues come up and seem to be ready to go forward. And sometimes it's hard to work on all the great ideas that you've had during the interim.
And every one of the legislators come with their ideas, too. So it's a huge melting pot there.
I think we will still be looking at ways to reform how government has been operating, similar to this rules and how the governor did his Red Tape Reduction Act. There's still ways that we can reshape the way it's doing to keep the proper branches in their proper lanes and make government more efficient from what I've heard.
Okay, well, we'll ask you about a few different if you're just tuning in, this is 88.5 KRFY, the morning show with Chris Asuzzi. And we're talking this morning with Representative Sage Dixon, our representative in legislature, Idaho legislature, that is. Representative Dixon, one of the issues that raised kind of a ruckus at the end of the legislative session last year was some potential revisions to create more stringent thresholds for getting initiatives on the ballot. And do you foresee that this issue may come before the legislature again this year? And you were actually involved in that as well.
Right. Yeah. I was involved. Pretty intimately involved. I think we'll see some. Nothing to the scope of what it was last year, but I think there's still a large desire to look at requiring some sort of funding disclosure. How do you think this is going to be paid for? Where are these dollars coming from? And maybe trying to refine the signature gatherers aspect of it, making sure that they're maybe registered with the state or the dollars aren't coming in from outside of the state or something to that effect to make it just clean it up a little bit. But I don't believe though anything to the extent of what we had tried to do last year, not that I've heard of. And again, as I said before, I've not been talking to a lot of other legislators about this issue, but that's the impression.
So the tweaks would be smaller. Last year actually would have raised the threshold right now, 6% of registered voters in 18 of the state's legislative districts have to sign a petition to get something on the ballot. Last year, it would have raised that to 10% in 2/3 of the districts and would have cut down the signature gathering time. Those were really big changes that really would have raised the bar quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But you don't anticipate that happening this year.
No, I don't.
Speaking of initiatives, though, there is one that's being actively worked on this year. Initiatives don't come along very often. I thought I did a little bit of research, and I saw that last year we had Propositions 1 and 2 that were citizen-initiated measures on the ballot. But the prior, I think, 4 or 6 years, there had been no initiatives on the ballot. So it takes a lot to get in something onto the ballot through the citizen initiative process. But there is one right now that's going on, and it's by the Reclaim Idaho group, and they're proposing to boost public education funding with a new initiative. Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
And that won't come before the legislature at all. I mean, this is an independent citizen group that's going on. It would be something you have to deal with if the thing passes.
Correct.
Yeah. Does the legislature have any posture on this type of activity, or do you guys? I'm just curious how the interplay might occur.
It would mostly occur if it passes, and then we have to deal with it as a legislature. And I think setting policy that way isn't well received because of our system of elected representation, and that's what we're supposed to be doing there. And the opportunity people have to select who will represent their interests and to set policy for the state. So this procedure steps outside of that. I don't know if we didn't see more in the past because it was difficult or there just wasn't as much as a push, but there's definitely a national push now to use this process to get certain policy measures through states that may not normally pass them. So I think that's why there's more activity across the nation with this ballot initiative process at this point. It's hard to say. If you just say, here's a pot of money for education, there's a whole lot more that goes into it than that. So a little more specificity might be better. in something like that. But that's why it's not necessarily a good idea, in my opinion, to set policy in that direction or that way.
I think anyone could argue the fact that more money for education is a good thing. And maybe sometimes a ballot initiative just brings up the fact that there's a missing component or a need in some area for the state to look at also.
Well, we've put $100 million on average for the past 5 years into education, and it's always a topic of conversation, and we always look at that and that need. So I don't think we're deficient in doing that. And everybody would like more money, yes. And there is a reality to our teachers going across the border and doing that, but that is the way our state is. We're a lower income state for the most part in doing that. So that threat's there for every profession, not just teaching. Mm-hmm. I don't think, again, it's something we've been deficient in, because we have put a lot of dollars in a lot of different ways with the career ladder, with general funding increasing on, and I'm sure we'll do it again, really, to be honest, as the dollars allow.
And when you said $100 million a year, you meant the legislature's added $100 million each year to the total budget.
Since I've been in office. Right.
So, we should recognize the legislature really is trying to put a ton of money into education, but there isn't that much money to be had. So the question is, where would more money come from if we wanted to fund education at a higher level?
Correct. And we're reticent as a state legislature to raise taxes on doing that. And I know this ballot initiative says to raise taxes. We just lowered our corporate tax, and it's stimulated a lot of activity and helped us with more revenues. So that would negate that. And then there's a chain of events that happens when you do things like that as well. The reading initiative seems to have been going well. Those dollars that we put into there, I'm trying to remember everything when I sat on that committee and did that, and when I was on the education committee as well. And so the large problem is what you just described, Chris, is there's only so much to spend. At this point, education is 63% of our budget. We're seeing health and welfare, though, slowly overtake that. And with Medicaid expansion, it will. And we have to have a balanced budget. And so that really constrains, thankfully, constrains what we can do. And although the desire is there, we have to be fiduciary really responsible with what we have and make the best decisions for everybody.
Required, actually. Right. So. I think most of us are happy.
Yes.
It's never an easy thing finding more money.
No.
But that is kind of your job, and that's what you work on pretty diligently. We'll go to minimum wage. Several proposals last year, I think House Bill 50, 54, and 55, were on the docket, I guess, to increase the minimum wage, but none advanced anything this year in that department.
We may see something again. I believe those all came from the minority party, and we have a system that's called a personal bill. It doesn't have to necessarily go through the process, that I described earlier, and you can just be assigned a bill number. Now, that's not looked upon kindly because it doesn't follow the process. It steps outside of it. So oftentimes, the minority will do that just to get an issue out for discussion and to show their constituents that they're doing things. There recently was a change in the minority leadership. The House Minority Leader, Representative Erpelding, resigned from the legislature, and they just appointed Representative Rubel to be the leader, and I believe Representative McCroskey is the assistant minority leader. We'll see. I don't think that that's out of the realm of possibility if they were to bring that up again, but that's something, again, that the legislature generally does not want to do. So I don't think they'll be heard, or I certainly don't think it would pass if it did make it to the floor in that sense. But I would anticipate something like a personal bill again, especially in an election year, so they can show their constituents, I told you I would do something, here I'm trying. And that allows them to have that when they go back home.
Another issue that's of interest, I'm sure, to the locals here is the possibly raising the population threshold for the resort city local option tax. Now, Sandpoint, it takes advantage of that right now, and it's restricted to cities under 10,000. The idea being that a small resort town that has a lot of infrastructure needs because of a ton of tourists that come in want to have an opportunity to have a tax. In our case, it's a 1 cent sales tax. And there's concerns now that Sandpoint, with this 2020 census coming up, could go over the 10,000 population. Right now, I think our population is officially around 8,000 or a little more than that.
I think it's a little more than that.
But with the census, we may end up finding we have a greater population than 10,000 here. Is there any consideration of raising that population cap for the resort city local option tax?
So Mayor Ronstadt and the city administrator, Jennifer Stapleton, came down last year or when they were in town for the city meeting. They spoke with Representative Scott and Senator Woodward and I about this. And each one of us saw value in the need to continue that. And so specifically, Senator Woodward and I poked around about what some solutions might be. And we were happy to find that since we have that designation already, even if we go over the 10,000 right now, we're safe. I think it's until 2024, because that's when the duration of that tax would expire. So it won't be an immediate effect once the census count comes in, which was good. It gives us time to work on something. Local option tax is not very popular in the House, similar to other things we've been talking about. And when I approached this subject with certain people, they said, well, we might be open to that, but we'd want it to be a two-thirds majority. They'd want to be sure that a supermajority of people were having their say, that they were okay with this additional tax being approved. The Association of Cities wasn't happy with that because that has further ramifications for the local option tax that may be coming up or that they were seeking and things like that. So it's something that I'm still nibbling around the edges on there to see what a solution is. And I believe Senator Woodward is also, and Representative Scott was involved in that meeting. And we know the necessity of it for our area. Mm-hmm. And generally, we're not, if I can speak for all of us, in favor of increased taxes or even maybe, that local option tax. But it definitely suits a need here because of that increased population that we have to bear. And I know it's an important part of the city's budget. So we'll be looking for solutions. Mm-hmm. And what that solution is, I'm not quite sure. It'll probably expand. I believe there's two cities that are close to going over that, and not very many cities within the state that take advantage of that resort tax, but it'll have...
Pondre just actually did.
Yes, yeah. They did. They've added to that number. One vote, yes.
Which goes to the point that even though that opportunity exists for small towns, they still got to get it approved by the locals.
Right.
Right. There's not going to be no tax unless the locals say, okay, we're... And right now, the threshold is 60%. So I guess the threshold would bump up to...
Oh, I thought it was a simple majority. I didn't think it was...
Oh, you're right. Excuse me. You are...
It's just 50% plus
no,
one.
No.
Oh?
No. Actually, excuse me. That's why Pondre came so close. They had quite a few more that voted for it, but they needed to get to the 60% threshold. Okay.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, but two-thirds would be raising it to 66%.
So right, but that's not a huge jump, so it's almost moot in that sense, in my opinion, to bump it up another 6%. So we are aware of that. I'm aware of it and want to find a solution for Sandpoint and Pondere at this point.
Okay, well, we have a few minutes for a few more questions. We're here with Representative Sage Dixon. This is the morning show, and... If you do not get to listen to the whole thing, this will be podcasted on our website at krfy.org, the whole interview. You can always go there later and continue. Let's move on to school funding formula. Last session, everyone thought a much anticipated rewrite of the school funding formula was going to be one of the year's major issues. Idaho lawmakers have spent about 3 years studying, switching from the current attendance-based formula to a weighted enrollment-based one. However, it did not advance. Will legislature take this up again this year?
Yes, they're going to keep looking at that. What we left with last year was trying to establish some way to determine the metrics more clearly on how this, or what we were actually gauging, how many students there were, what this enrollment would look like. We did do a lot of work. I was on that committee for 3 years. We involved everybody across the state, but when the reality of legislation came up, everybody got a little nervous again because budgets are tight within school districts, and any kind of change is difficult. They're not anxious to go in a direction of change, I should say, in doing that. We tried to put a hold harmless in there where nobody, even though initially it may look like you're losing money, we were going to make up for that for 3 years to a point where everybody would be solvent going forward. But I think it was just too much, probably too soon. And to the point of that some made, we didn't have everything lined up correctly to see exactly what those metrics were. And that's why we added this. So I think that conversation will continue as far as trying to determine exactly what we're looking at so we can be more accurate when we change that funding formula to an enrollment-based. I think everybody's agreed that we need to go to the enrollment-based formula from what we have. What that looks like is still to be determined, but I'm sure that'll be a discussion again.
Mm-hmm. Here's another one that might be a discussion. So our state prisons are getting pretty full. Right now, the state, it sends about 700 inmates to private prisons in Texas because there just isn't room in state for those. The Board of Corrections has voted to support a $500 million plan to build a new prison. Didn't really go anywhere last year. Will prisons be on the agenda this year?
I'm sure it will. That is a definitive need that we have. Whether to build a new one or to add on to some existing ones that we have to help mitigate that need, I don't know. I was superficially involved in some of those conversations. It's difficult when you're not on those committees to know the depth of what that discussion is, and you just kind of pick bits and pieces up. But I think we're all aware that there is the need that you described, and we need to find some solution because it's a waste of our dollars to continue paying somebody else. I think the counties are feeling a large pinch also in having to hold on to prisoners longer in order to keep them out of the prison system because there's overcrowding at this point. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's just move on for a moment to census, the 2020 census and legislative redistricting. Per 1994 constitutional amendment, Idaho legislative district lines are drawn by a 6-member panel of 3 Democrats, 3 Republicans. Do you foresee any action on redistricting?
I'm sure we'll do something. There's been enough discussion about that, and there was early last session. I don't know if it will be that same discussion that started last session about adding a 7th member. There's concern about it always defaulting to the courts and the courts making those decisions, and that was the intent from what I understood about adding that 7th member and trying to make it as just and equal as possible by saying it would be the constitutional officers, because that's a reflection of the will of the people in general, and you could have a change. Yes, now they're all Republican, but in the future, that could obviously change. Our district will look different, in my opinion. I think our numbers roughly were at 45,000 right now, and I think that'll jump up to over 50. So I'm assuming we'll get the rest of Bonner County back and may creep down a little bit into Kootenai County, because Kootenai County is going to change dramatically in doing that.
They've had even more growth down there.
Absolutely, yeah, yes. Right. Yeah, mm-hmm. They claim to be one of the fastest growing, or the fastest growing in the country, like we talked about earlier as well. So they're district boundaries will change quite a bit, and I anticipate us creeping down a little bit, maybe to Athol, or at least picking up Spirit Lake. That's just my conjecture, and trying to see where we would get, or where the courts or whoever would draw the lines would see a reasonable place to do that. The concern that we've talked about, or I've heard discussed, is the court defaults to keeping counties whole and bodies that are contiguous whole, and our Constitution says you can go from 30 to 35 districts. And right now we're at 35, but if the court thinks it makes sense to have less districts, but they're more contiguous in continuity and belief, then we may lose some districts as well. So we may try to adjust that, but it would have to be a constitutional amendment, which is far more difficult. But that's what I've heard on that front.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, redistricting. Right now we're in a situation where Legislative District 7 stretches all the way down from Riggins all the way up to Sagal. And
right.
It's this huge district. It kind of disenfranchises, I feel, the people in Sagal.
They're
not with their community of interest, which would be really District
right.
1.
And that's the difficult part of the redistricting. And those are fine representatives and senators in District 7, but they don't get up here very much. And I know our folks in Bonner County don't feel like they're accurately represented, even though they appreciate what those representatives do.
Yeah, they just don't have the chance to have the representative's ear as well.
So you're anticipating that may look different.
I'm hopeful. It makes sense. And as we have to grow our numbers, that would make sense to me anyway, to keep counties whole.
Yeah. So there's that. One more question we can squeeze in on the topic of hemp. A lot of states now have legalized marijuana. But Idaho is one of the few states in the country where hemp cultivation is illegal, and where even out-of-state truckers transporting that through the state risk going to prison. I think some bills have come up in the past, or at least been talked about. Is anything going to happen there?
I'm pretty sure we'll be able to resolve that. Last year, we ended up waiting to see what the federal rules would look like, and now they've established them, so that will help us make those decisions. There was kind of of a political or an internal battle within the House between two representatives with two different visions of what that should look like that ultimately caused that to be scuttled. But it came through the Transportation Committee in the end. It started in agricultural and came through transportation. And we decided we really can't set our standards until we know what the federal standards are. And I think Farm Bureau has done a great job of promoting this issue. There's many, many agricultural producers that are interested in taking advantage of this for a multitude of reasons. And I think the governor's on board, but I'm pretty sure we should be able to address that.
Okay.
Well, there we go. Thank you so much, Representative Sage Dixon, for representing all of the citizens of District 1. Your our district may increase. We'll see how that
I'll
goes.
I'll get some more, maybe.
The Sago people would be happy about that. And thanks for coming in and keeping us informed. We look forward to hearing from you this spring, maybe throughout the session. Who knows?
Certainly.
We could always do a phone interview, too.
Yes, I'd be
we
happy
can
to.
Do that.
We should ask. So if your constituents want to get in touch with you, bend your ear about some matter that's important to them, how would they do that?
Through my legislative email, which is sdixon, D-I-X-O-N, at house.idaho.gov. Or you can go to the legislature.idaho.gov website that we talked about before, and you can find
There's
me there.
Contact information.
Correct.
There. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then my cell is 208-610-4800, and I give that out also.
Okay.
I'm not very good at returning calls, but
well, you tend to be kind of busy and in committee meetings and doing all that kind of stuff. But again, as Susie said, thanks so much for coming in and great talk about all these things going on down
there. Oh, I appreciate the opportunity. It's always enjoyable for me.
Best of luck down there in Boise. And we're going to do a few announcements, say goodbye to Representative Dixon. Thanks again. And a few announcements. This is a notice that came in from the Lions Club. They would like to inform the residents within Lake Pend'Oreille School District that the club is still taking applications for toys and Christmas dinner food boxes. And this is a new addition to the dinner boxes this year. They may be picked up, or you can fill out an application at the club den at 607 Ella Street in Sandpoint, Wednesday, Friday, and this coming upcoming Monday until 4 p.m. Applications can also be picked up at the Health and Welfare Office at 207 Larkspur Street in Pend'Oreille. Applications can be dropped off at the den. The club has raised $79,000 to date, and thanks all those who have donated. And they're working on their goal of $50,000 to help support our community in having a Merry Christmas. And they thank you for that. You can send donations, if you would like, to the Sandpoint Lions Club at 414 Sandpoint 83864. And what else do we have, Chris, before we say goodbye?
Well, there's a lot of opportunities to get in the Christmas spirit with events around town this week. There's a Celtic Christmas concert with the Irish Trio Affinity, which has actually Bing Crosby's nephew
and
in it.
You know what? That was last night. And
oh,
guess
that was
what?
Last night. Oh,
it
you're
was
right. That's Tuesday.
Amazing. It was a sold-out crowd. And I did not go, but they said it was beautiful folks that were there. So, yeah, we're really getting into the Christmas spirit here.
Yeah, okay, well. So
lots of events.
I guess you can't go hear that now, but it's cool to hear that they sold it out.
They
That's
sold
amazing.
Out, yeah.
There's a musical gift for Christmas, orchestra concert Friday and Sunday. There's a Suzuki string musicians and Allegro dancers Saturday with something called This Christmas Night. There's the Jazzy Nutcracker that's also Saturday at the Panada with the Studio One Dance Academy.
There is Hansel and Gretel by the music. No, this is Bel Canto. It's an opera. Oh. And they were in here a few weeks ago, maybe last week even, and talked about it. And we even heard a little bit of Karin Wiedemeyer's singing. And that will be at the Heartwood Center on the 24th of December. And they're going to have a gingerbread making situation at the end.
Fun.
Oh, that sounds really fun, doesn't
yeah.
it? There's a Selkirk Brass Christmas at First Presbyterian Church that will have a brass quintet. And we're just scratching the surface here. Go to our website, krfy.org, click on the community calendars tab up at the top, and you can see all these, get all the details on these events and a ton more that we're not even mentioning.
And tomorrow on the morning show, Jim and Jack will be visiting with Mike Bauer from the East Bonner County Library for their events and programs that they have coming up and what they offer. It's, we have an amazing library. We all know that. We all say that. And next week, the special morning show celebrating community radio every day, Monday through Thursday, maybe even Friday, we have special guests. And Chris, you and I are going to have The Reason for the Season, one of my favorite morning shows, where we have three different pastors coming in talking about what is the reason for the season from their perspective. And these are faith leaders in our community. And I know we have Pastor Andy from the Presbyterians, and you talked to two others.
Yes, Cedar Hills Church, Pastor Eric there, and then the Pastor Redeemer Lutheran Church, the new pastor there, Steve, is going to be in. So we'll have
it's
a great
always
talk.
Fun.
Yeah, great talk about what the real meaning of Christmas is.
For yeah, you. From that perspective, and mm-hmm. it's kind of bring a little Christmas cheer to the studio here. So tune in all next week. Remember that we have an event coming up at the Idaho Poor Authority. It's not just an annual meeting and fundraiser. It is a fun party, and that's what we do here at KRFY, and we want everyone to come and celebrate community radio in North Idaho. And with that,
we'll go out with a song.
We're going to go out with a song. This is Bing Crosby, White Christmas, and then you might hear a little bit more of the Beach Boys' Blue Christmas. So here we go. Have a great day, everyone.
Have a nice week.